Hey everybody, welcome to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. I'm your host Brenton Bickerstaff, and this week on the show joining me is Echo Bodine. Echo Bodine is the best-selling author of a number of books including Echoes of the Soul, A Still Small Voice, The Gift, and most recently her book What Happens When We Die. She's a renowned spiritual healer, a psychic, and a teacher who lectures widely on intuition, spiritual healing, and life after death. She also has a monthly radio show and a popular blog, and she lectures for the ARE's field programs. To check out the latest schedule, you can visit edgarcayce.org, that's edgarcayce.org/fieldconferences. That's again edgarcayce.org/fieldconferences. You can visit Echo online at echobodine.com, where you can read her popular blog, purchase any of her books, or sign up for her classes offered both online and in person. That's echobodine.com. It's echobodine.com. I hope you all enjoy my interview with Echo Bodine.
Well, thank you so much for joining me on the show, Echo. I appreciate it.
Oh my gosh, you're so welcome.
We've written quite a few books, but your most recent one is entitled What Happens When We Die. And can you tell us a little bit about this book and what was the process of how it came about?
Well, as a healer and as a psychic, I work a lot with people that are in their dying process. I've worked with their families. I've done a lot of readings for people who come to communicate with their deceased. And it just seemed like, oh my gosh, you know, there's a lot of misconceptions about death, a lot of fear about death. And it just seemed like, okay, it's time to write this book. And what's interesting, Brent, is that, you know, the first several chapters came together really easy, and it was the last chapter that actually the conclusion of the book was very difficult for me to write. I couldn't get it together. I wrote several different chapters, none of them felt right, and my publisher, bless her heart, she was, you know, she'd check in and say, Echo, the book is due, you got to get it in here, and I'd just say, you know what, I'm stuck. I can't get the last chapter the way I want it to be. And I said, it just feels like I need to learn more before I can finish this book. And that's exactly what happened. My mom died, and that was the last chapter of the book. And I learned so much from that process, and that completed the book. So it's all because of my work as a psychic medium and as a spiritual healer that I realized there just needs to be a comforting book out there about death and what happens.
And did writing the book help you with the coping process?
You know, Brent, we all knew Mom was in hospice. I thought, okay, this is going to make her death easier when it finally happens because I have all this information. And, you know, to me, let's see, did it make it easier? Yes, it did actually make it a lot easier for me to accept her death and to go through the grieving process just to have all this information.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, it has.
And I know you said that there's a lot of misconceptions about what happens when we die, and that's the reason for writing this book. What would you say is the biggest misconception?
Well, I guess I'd have to say the biggest misconception is that people think when we die, we just automatically are really happy. And we go on to the other side and, you know, we just live this wonderful life in heaven. And that's not the case. I mean, we are human beings. And when we die, we also, our souls go through a grieving process. And people here on Earth don't understand that. Oh, I've run into so many people that just think, well, you know, now my loved one is in a much better place and they're happy. And one of the other misconceptions is people think it's okay to just call on the deceased whenever they feel like it. A lot of people ask the deceased to please come and take care of them. Please come and be with me. Please help me through this. I can't live without you, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And what's important for people to realize is that the soul is also going through a grieving process. They are in the process of letting go of a life that they have worked very hard to create, and they are going to miss their loved ones. some of them are going to have regrets. They're going to remember things that they wish they had done different. So it's important to honor the soul and realize that they are going through a process also. That's really important. And people, right. You know, religion doesn't teach us that. We just somehow get the idea that they're really happy and we're really sad. And one of the other really big misconceptions is that God has decided to take our loved one away from us. You know, that's what usually what ministers will say in a sermon as well. You know, the Lord decided that he needed her home with him. And it's like, oh, wow. I mean, talk about sounding like a very selfish God.
Right.
You know, it isn't God that says, okay, it's time for you to come home. We all have a life plan, and in that life plan is when we're done. And so it isn't God snatching our loved ones away from us. It is that soul's plan to leave at that time. And for a lot of us, we won't even understand why they had to go at that time for even a year. That's what I've seen, is a lot of people at the year anniversary go, okay, now I understand why they had to go.
Right.
But a lot of people don't understand that for a while. It's not God, a selfish God, taking our loved one away from us. That's such a horrible misconception.
Right. And I would say that conception may come oftentimes from a religious background that we're raised with.
So that's where they get it.
Right, and most of us have been introduced to the concept of a soul through, you know, religious means.
Yeah.
What exactly is your definition of a soul?
You know, honey, a soul, it's pretty cool because our soul really is us, our personality, and they look just like us. They look exactly like us, except that they don't have the stress look on their faces that we have on our physical bodies. And when I see a soul come out of the body at the time of death, they really do look just like themselves, except that they're transparent. You can see through them. And that is totally the energy of that person. That's something else that religion teaches us about soul, but they don't really give us a good definition of what it is. And so a lot of us kind of walk around feeling totally disconnected from our own soul, which is actually, it's, oh my gosh, it's like feeling disconnected from our left arm. You know, we are our soul, but we have this physical covering. And so I guess the best way to describe it really is our soul is us. It's our personality. It's our whole essence, our whole being. But we're housed in this physical body just to get around. So a lot of people think that we are the physical we are all about being the physical body, and then there's this energy in us somewhere that's the soul, but we don't understand it, and so we don't think about it much, when in fact, we are really all soul, just with a physical covering.
Right.
How is that for a description?
That's great. That's perfect.
Okay, good.
It's unfortunate they don't give you that in church.
They don't, and I think it's because they don't understand it either. They don't.
Right.
They don't take the time to understand it.
Right.
So that's very unfortunate.
And Edgar Cayce is well known for saying that all souls were created in the beginning. In saying this, is there such thing as an old soul, as many people refer to?
Yes, honey, there is. Now, you know what's interesting about Cayce saying that is that my guides have told me that the Creator, the universe, whatever you want to call it, has continued to create new souls. But you could look at that statement from Cayce and understand it from a different perspective, because there are a lot of young souls on Earth right now. Those are the young souls who are the kids who are in gangs, who are killing each other, who think it's okay to kill each other. It's the people that haven't got a concept yet of life and, oh gosh, kind of like the rules of life. So you can tell, you know, you can easily tell a young soul from an old soul, even by looking in their eyes. The younger souls have a kind of a distant absence in their eyes, whereas the older souls, you can almost see all the wisdom in their eyes. There's definitely a difference, definitely a difference between a young soul and an old soul.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And in your book, you say that no one ever dies alone, which is a hard concept for some people to grasp, and it's also a fear that a lot of people share that they will die alone. And you say even if they are physically alone, there's nobody in the room with them, they never actually die alone. And can you explain that?
Yeah, honey. Okay, we all have spirit guides. We also have lots of deceased loved ones. And when our soul is ready to pass out of the body, our loved ones from the other side are here, maybe not all of them, usually not all of them. Usually the key people that we know from the other side have come here. They're in the hospital room. They're in our house, wherever we're passing. They're right there. And, you know, in hospitals, a lot of times a person that's dying, they'll say, oh.
And we'll be right back with more from Echo Bodine here on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. And welcome back to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We'll get right back into the interview with more from Echo Bodine.
You know, like my dad said, oh, do you see that soldier by the window? And it's like, yeah, Dad, who is that? I knew him when I was in the Navy. Oh, okay. And I also saw my grandma, his mother. I saw her in the room, and she was really, it was interesting to see my grandma because she, when she was alive, she did not dote on my dad. But when she was in the hospital, those 2 to 3 days before he died, oh my goodness, she was doting on him. His name was Edward Bodine, and she always called him Edward when he was growing up. And she was calling him Eddie, which was so different, and she was being very nurturing, which was very different from my grandma. And it was just interesting to watch her be so sweet with my dad. And then when my dad did pass, she took his hand, and they went right to the light. I mean, she was like, come on, Eddie, we're going home. And that was
it.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. So, and what's also interesting, Brent, is that, as I say in the book, you know, it's funny, because I said in the book that souls prefer to go when there's no one in the room. I mean, no physical family members in the room, because it's easier for them. It's kind of like, you know, when you have a child and you're going out for the evening and the child gets really upset when you go, and so you got to figure out a way to sneak out of there. And it's kind of like that for the soul. They hate leaving when all of their loved ones are sitting there. Well, not
right.
All of them. But it's like, you know, there's your loved ones. They're crying. They're praying for a miracle. They're, oh, my God, don't die. Don't die. I can't live without you. It's like, oh, geez, I think I'm going to break everybody's heart and leave right now.
Right.
Like, you know, so it's actually, okay, so I knew that. And yet, it was interesting because when we were all sitting there with my dad, my brother said, you know, are you guys hungry? Yeah. Okay, let's run downstairs and get something to eat really quick, and then we'll come back. And it didn't even occur to me that that's when my dad would leave. And because the nurse had said, you know, you've got at least another day with him. Okay. So we all shot down to the cafeteria, sat and ate, then went back up in the room. And Brent, it was so interesting because I walked in the room and something was missing. And I looked at my sister, and I said, does this feel like something's missing in here? Did they take something out of the room? And we looked at all the machines, and all the machines are still hooked up. And there's Dad, and he's still breathing. And she goes, yeah, it does feel like there's something missing in here. And about maybe 5 or 10 seconds later, the words came into my head, his soul has left.
Wow.
And I looked at his body, and that's when I saw the visual of my grandma saying, come on, Eddie, let's go home. And then I saw an image of my dad's soul on his way to the light. And I psychically said to my dad, well, Dad, your body is still breathing. And my dad's soul said to me, I have a strong heart, honey. It'll be gone tomorrow. And that's exactly what happened. It was the next day that his body actually died.
Wow.
But he had already been gone for 24 hours when his body shut down.
Wow. How fascinating.
Interesting, huh?
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Wow. You say it's important for us to both talk and listen to the dying. What was that process for you like, and what should that conversation be like?
Well, what's nice for them is to be able to reminisce. That's what I did with my mom a lot in the 6 months leading up to her death was, Mom, what are your memories? And do you have regrets? Let's talk about those. And let's look at those. Let's talk through those so that you don't have them when you die. The nice thing about my mom in her dying process was that we could talk about it. A lot of people are afraid to say to the dying person, well, you're dying, so let's talk about your life. My mom was a psychic. She was a very spiritual woman. So it was very, what would the word be? It was very freeing to be able to say, okay, Mom, let's talk. Talk to me about your life. Talk to me about your thoughts about death. What do you think about heaven? Are you looking forward to it? Are you scared? We would have very open conversations about it. And she was very, very open. Some days I'm scared, honey. Other days I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, I do have some regrets. And those were the days my mom would really open up about, and she'd tell me things that she had never said before, that I had never heard before. But there were other times she would call me, and Brent, she would just start talking about her life. And
right.
Talking and talking and talking about her childhood and about what it was like to be a teenager and what it was like to meet my dad and this other love that she had. And, the best thing I could do for her was just listen and listen and listen and sound interested. And I've seen people, I've been with families and the dying person is trying to talk about their life and their memories. And their loved ones are like, oh, no, Dad, that's not necessary. You don't have to talk about that. Let's talk about something else. It's very interesting because it's like the living thinks, well, if we don't talk about death, then he won't die.
And
that's doing a real disservice to the person that's dying because they need to talk. They want to talk. And they want to talk as if they're dying. Instead of pretending, let's all pretend that I'm going to make it through this. It's like the nicest gift we can give the dying is to almost do like an interview with them. And what was your life like? What was it like to be a teenager for you at that time in history? And what was it like when the first time you met, your first husband? Or just get them to talk. And what I found with my mom, too, is some of the memories made her cry. And then she'd say to me, oh, honey, thank you for that. I needed to get rid of that.
Wow.
So, it's like so many people pretend that death is not happening. And I think that's a real disservice to everybody, to the living and to the dying.
Right.
Yep.
It's unnatural in a way because it is very natural for death to come. It's a process of life and death. So,
exactly.
To resist it is a very unnatural thing.
That's right, honey. That's right. And yet we do it all the time.
We do. And what was it like? You said your mother was psychic. Did she always know that she was psychic growing up?
She and I developed our psychic abilities at the same time. And I was 17. She was 37, and we had an unusual experience in my family. One night, one of my brothers saw a spirit, and that's what led Mom to call a local psychic, and we hadn't been to psychics. My mom always talked about her intuition, and she lived by her intuition, and she taught me to live by my intuition, but we never really talked about psychic abilities. And when we went to the psychic for the first time, she told both of us that we would be well-known psychics. She told me that I was born with all four of the psychic abilities and with the gift of healing. And she said that I would write several books, be on radio and TV, travel around the world, and teach people how to develop their abilities. And she told my mom that she would be a very well-known psychic someday, and also that my brother Michael would be, a well-known psychic, and that my sister Nikki would be a very good psychic and healer. And it all came true. And then when Mom started thinking back to her life, it's like, oh, that's why I knew that was going to happen. That's why I had those pictures in my head. So even though we were psychic all of our lives, we didn't really understand it until, like I said, I was 17 and she was 37.
Right. And what was it like having the whole family kind of involved? Were you guys coming together in any way?
Yeah, honey, it was good for Mom, Michael, and myself to grow together. My sister, Nikki, she was kind of, we always referred to her kind of as the normal one in the family, where she didn't come into her gifts until she was in her 40s.
Oh, okay.
And she just, you know, she's a flight attendant. She just did normal things, had normal jobs, whereas the rest of us, we had other jobs, but our abilities just kept getting stronger and stronger and stronger.
Right.
So it was nice. It's been really nice to grow up with a psychic mom and a psychic brother. And now it's really fun now that my sister is a full-blown psychic medium. It's really fun for her because she and I can now talk, have the same conversations Mom and I used to have.
Right. Wow. That's great.
Yeah.
And you talked a little bit about seeing spirits earlier. How do you communicate with the dead? How do they appear to you?
Honey, they appear exactly like they did when they were living. I mean, it's really like standing and sitting and having a conversation with a person. They look exactly like a person, except that they are transparent. So you can see the wall behind them, but, you know, they appear in clothing, oftentimes appear in clothing that was their favorite outfit to wear. You know, I don't think I've ever seen a spirit that was dressed in clothing that they had on at their funeral. It's just, you know, I had a friend when he died, he always wore blue jeans and a leather jacket. And yet at his funeral, they had him, you know, dressed up in a suit. The first time I remember seeing him after his death, there he was in his blue jeans and his leather jacket.
Right.
So, yeah, they just appear normal, honey, so normal. But again, they look younger. And usually, pretty much everybody in heaven that I've seen looks like they're late 20s, maybe early 30s. So even if your grandma dies and she's 95 years old, at some point, you know, usually it can take a couple months after their death, but their soul shifts back to a time in their life when they were younger.
Right.
And all that stress is gone.
And we'll be right back with more from Echo Bodine here on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. And welcome back to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We'll get right back into the interview with more from Echo Bodine. And I know because of socioeconomic and other things that are going on right now, a lot of people have had to deal with losing children, with child loss. And what would you tell somebody who's dealing with child loss?
What I would definitely tell people that have child loss is, first of all, it is not God that took that child away from them. God is not like that. And that it was written in the child's life plan that this was their time to go and to cherish all the memories they have with that child, but it was not meant to be. You know, people say, oh, she didn't get to go to prom. Well, if it was important to her soul to go to prom, she would have stayed until after prom. But a lot of these souls, the children's souls, they don't care about this stuff that we care about. They come in, they go through the experiences that their soul wanted to have, and then they're out of here, and they get to go back home. So a child's death, oh, I wish people could, you know, people suffer so much from a child's death. And, I think the first thing I would want to say to people is, first of all, don't take your children for granted. Don't assume that because you have a child, that child is going to live to be 90 years old. Okay. Don't assume that you're never going to have to bury that child. Don't take that child's life for granted. And we go when we go, and it's not the parents' fault unless they caused that death. But even if they caused the death, it's probably the way it was meant to be. So get away from the idea that it's God that took your child away from you. Get away from the idea that, oh, the child never got to go to prom or drive a car or have children. It isn't important to that child's soul to have those experiences. Those are earth experiences. Those are not necessarily soul experiences. And to just cherish every memory that you have of that child and see how you can turn that death into a positive experience. And I know that's very hard for people who have lost a child, but it can heal them a lot faster. So that's what I definitely recommend.
That's great advice. And in talking about children, there's a huge trend today with all the drugs and things that are going on with kids of suicide rates being particularly high.
I know.
What would you say to somebody who had to deal with a suicide?
Well, what I say to anybody who's lost a loved one through suicide is just, okay, have compassion for that soul. Realize that, okay, they just really felt like they couldn't take it anymore. So be compassionate. It doesn't help to be angry at them. A lot of the souls that commit suicide, the bummer for them is that people think, this is another misconception, people think that if they commit suicide, all the pain is going to be gone.
Right.
And that, if it's depression, no, that depression is going to go with them into death. Now, if they commit suicide because they've got bill collectors calling, okay, right, that's going to stop. The bill collectors won't be calling them anymore. But they need to look beyond the whole idea of, I got to get away from these bill collectors. Find, if people are contemplating suicide because they can't handle it, the IRS is after them, or the bill collectors are calling every day, okay, there are solutions. They can find a solution. Don't take your life because of something like that. Your soul has chosen to go through this difficult financial situation for some reason. If people are contemplating suicide because they can get away from the depression that they're in, the depression is actually in their soul. And oftentimes it's because of unresolved issues. So instead of taking your own life, stopping your physical life, do whatever you can to address the problems that you're having. Do it here. Don't take all that with you home to the other side. That is a big misconception that people have and teenagers have, is that if I take my own life, then all the pain stops, and I get to be happy, and I get to go to heaven. But we take that heaviness with us, and so we might as well deal with it here. So for parents of children that are committing suicide, tell your child to go to the light. Go to the light and get the help that they need. That's the best thing people can do. You know, I've seen mothers who are so in grief when their teenager takes their own life. And the mother is like, oh, please, please, please come and take care of me. Please come and be with me. I have to hear from you. I have to know you're okay. I can't go on until I hear from you. That is even more pressure on that soul that's already depressed. They don't need to hear that kind of thing. It's not their job to come and take care of the living. They need to get on with their life. They need to go on to the other side, get the help that they could have gotten here, and both parties, the living and the deceased, need to disconnect from each other so that we can all just move on from the experience and go through our own grieving process. That always concerns me, the parents I see that just beg their child to come and take care of me, come and take care of me. And when there was the Columbine shooting many years ago, I checked in on all of the different souls, all the different teenagers that died, and almost all of them went right to the light. They stayed around a lot of them stayed around for 2-3 hours after the experience because they wanted to go and be with their parents, see how their parents were coping, be there for their parents. But there was one child in particular, he went home immediately, and his soul was there with his mom when they got the call about him dying. And he stayed with her. He sat on her bed for weeks, because I would check in on him all the time to see, have you gone on yet? And I said to him at one point, his soul, honey, you know, you really should go on to the light. No, I can't. I'm really worried about my mom. I don't want her to take her own life. She keeps thinking if she kills herself, then she can be with me, but that's not how this is supposed to go. And he said, I'll go to the other side when I know she's going to be okay. And, okay, so 2-3 weeks will go by, and I check and see if he had moved on yet. Nope, still sitting on her bed. She's laying in bed crying and crying and crying. And he's trying to reach her. He's trying to let her know that it's all okay. And even 2-3 months, I checked in. Soul still sitting there with her. Wow. She couldn't snap out of it. And then, I don't know how long it was, honey, but then the news people did a story on the families of Columbine, and they said that one of the mothers committed suicide because she couldn't deal with the grief. So I'm sure that that was his mother.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A tragedy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it seems a lot of this stems from just lack of education, you know, education about death. You know, we don't know. And the main source is typically a religious source as we're growing up. And as we know, mm-hmm. that's not the most clear definition of what happens when we die. So aside from reading your book, What Happens When We Die, what do you think needs to change there?
Religion needs to kind of update their information.
Right.
You know, they're kind of stuck in what was written, 2,000-3,000 years ago. And it's like, okay, folks, there's modern-day prophets like Edgar Cayce who are giving us updates on how things are. And a lot of the religions, they don't want to go there because that's considered New Age. That's considered whatever. And so they just stay really stuck in their old way of thinking. And, you know, all the other areas of our life have been upgraded, but religion won't upgrade. It's like, no, we have to do it the way it was written thousands of years ago. And it's really a shame. And I wish all the churches would kind of wake up and smell the coffee. It's 2013, for goodness sakes.
Right.
And there are wonderful, wonderful channels of information here on the planet. God, it's like, come on, folks, open up your eyes. And, you know, Brent, there's a book called 90 Minutes in Heaven that I read. I talk about this in the book. And this minister, this preacher, had a near-death experience. And he went to the other side. But he went to the part in heaven where he talks about how everyone, what they did all day was they sang God's praises all day, and that's all they do. And he writes this in his book, and I'm like, are you kidding me? The first thought that I had was, really? God's that much of an egomaniac that he wants us to stand and sing praises to him all day? It's like, but then I thought, okay, this is what this guy's belief system is.
And we'll be right back with more from Echo Bodine here on Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. And welcome back to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We'll get right back into the interview with more from Echo Bodine.
That's what he's going to find when he gets to heaven. And how comforting is that going to be for people? I don't want to go to a place where I have to sing God's praises all day. God knows I love him. I don't need to do that. So, and you know, the part that is the worst is that became the New York Times bestseller.
Of course.
Yeah. I don't know. I get very frustrated with religion because it just refuses to come up to date gosh, if these folks would meditate, if they would talk to God, right. Not the God in the Bible, but the real God, if they would get to know the real God and say, well, what do you think about things? And upgrade it to the way things are now, a lot of the stuff that they're teaching would no longer be taught.
Right. But do you think with people like yourself who's doing great work and doing blogs and really doing everything they can to put forth effort to educate and to be there to help people and be of service, I notice that there's a trend of this just ever increasing and it's gaining force. Do you think it'll eventually overtake religion and become the new religion, kind of new age thought?
Oh, I would love it.
Yeah,
that would be
wonderful. I would
love it if more and more and more people continued to read the blogs and continued to search. You know, that's the interesting thing, Brent, is that a lot of people don't get on a spiritual path until they lose someone. And then, Brent, I teach psychic development classes, and I bet you maybe 50% of the class, people in the class take the class because they've lost a loved one, and they want to learn how to communicate with that loved one.
Right.
They want to understand life after death better. So it's through death that a lot of people get on this path, because their religion is not giving them satisfactory answers. So yeah, I think for those of us, the mediums out there who are writing these blogs, writing the books, going around teaching, we're going to shift things. That's my hope, is that we're going to shift people away. But you know, what's interesting is a lot of people still, they'll tell me that, you know, I read your book, Echo, and I went to my minister and I said, oh, I read this book, and what do you think? And the minister says, oh my God, that's Satan's work. Get rid of that book. Throw it away. Burn the book. It's like, really? Seriously?
Yeah.
They're still saying that? But there's also a lot of people that are breaking away from it right now and asking questions, which
right.
I love.
Yeah, I love to see that. I think it's happening
yep.
more and more.
Yep.
You know, the media will not show it to you, but, you know, with the beauty of the internet and the free access to information that we have now, you can, you know, it's out there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I agree.
Final question would be, do you personally fear death? Because I think that is one of the biggest fears in our culture right now,
mm-hmm.
just because of a lack of education, like we talked about, and religious influence.
Mm-hmm.
Do you personally fear death, and why or why not?
No, no, honey. You know what? I see it just as going from one home to another home, going back home. And so, no, I don't fear death. I think one of the reasons I don't fear it also is because I truly live my life like, okay, what if this is my last day? Have I done everything I wanted to do? I always live like that because of my work and because of seeing so many people not live that way. You know, so many people, Brent, the thing that's sad to me is that so many people think, well, when I retire, I'm going to take that trip and I'm going to buy that trailer and I'm going to, you know, learn how to ride a motorcycle. I'm going to do all these things when I retire. And then people retire, and because they haven't got anything to do, a lot of people just get sick and die.
Right.
And so I have learned from my clients not to do that. And to live each day as if it could be my last, and I make it count. I literally, at the end of every day, I take an inventory. Okay, is there something I could have done tomorrow that I didn't do today? Well, then let's do it tomorrow for sure. And so I really pay attention to my life here now. And I don't live in the future too much. I think about the future, but I really stay focused on today and the life that I have today. And it seems to work for me. And so I figure that when that day does come, just like my mom was, when that day did come, she was ready to go.
Right.
And that's how I feel like I will be too.
Good. Wow. Well, thank you so much. It was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks, honey. Thanks. So sweet. Thank
All
you
right.
very much.
You're very welcome. My pleasure, Echo. You have a great day.
Thanks, honey. Bye-bye.
Okay. Now it's time for the thought for the day. And the thought for the day today is from reading 5749-14. In it, Edgar Cayce was posed the question, are hereditary, environment, and will equal factors in aiding or retarding development? The answer Edgar Cayce gave was will is the greater factor, for it may overcome any or all of the others, provided that will is made one with the pattern.
for no influence of heredity, environment, or whatnot surpasses the will. And I love this because this one really had me thinking about what's the spiritual equivalent of heredity, the physical traits that are passed on before we're born. And of course I thought of the law of karma, which brings you karmic patterns that can come possibly from past lives. And then I took this one step further and thought about the law of gravity. And actually, I noticed that the law of gravity and the law of karma, in my opinion, look like two sides of the same coin. They're actually what binds us and keeps us in place. And in thinking about this, I thought, density could possibly be the collective karma of everybody here on Earth. That's what's making us so dense in the material world. And I thought, gosh, this is why forgiveness is so important and why Edgar Cayce talks about that. If you're going to believe in the victim-victimizer process, you will be heavily affected by gravity. And this could possibly tie in to the obesity problems that we experience here in America. The reason bodies get so dense could possibly be because it's made up of grievances and false perceptions about who they truly are on the deeper spiritual level. Understanding that, as Cayce said, we're spiritual beings having a physical experience. Well, that's all the time we have for the show this week. I want to thank you so much for taking time out of your week to listen. If you have any comments about the show, we'd love to have you join the discussion on our Facebook page at Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce Internet Radio Show. I want to thank my guest this week, Echo Bodine. To find out more about Echo, read her popular blog, or purchase any of her books, including her most recent, entitled What Happens When We Die, visit her website at echobodine.com. That's echobodine.com. And don't forget to join us next week, as I'm joined by ARE's resident past life regression hypnotherapist and Harvard graduate Peter Woodbury, as he returns from leading an ARE tour to sacred sites throughout India. I'm sure there's going to be plenty to talk about. Remember to always make the world a better place because you have lived in it, and don't forget to smile along the way. Hope everyone has a wonderful week. I'll see you next week.